Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Better Than Autumn show.
I'm surprised you didn't call it the I'm Stuck With You show.
As Rick has noted, our co-medical host Shelley Irving from the University of Kentucky is in fact absent.
Does she ever work 2 weeks in a row?
She is shutting down our Isonville bureau.
I don't believe you're right.
Cost overruns, lack of productivity. I think at some point you got to pull the plug. But unfortunately, here with us from the University of Kentucky to hold down the fort, Executive Director of Networking and Infrastructure, which is certainly very important, Rick Phillips, to tell you about our web presence. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Tony. You know you can get the audio of the show at Moorhead State Public Radio's website, wmky.org. That's right. There's where you can find Health Matters. Get there, look at the list of shows, read the summaries, but most important, there is a link there to the audio. Click on the link, download the MP3, play it, listen to the audio of the show. It's there for your listening pleasure. After that, it's time to interact with the show. We will send you things. You can send us things. It is a marvelous, marvelous invention. It is facebook.com/HMRadioShow. Again, it is a fan page devoted to Health Matters. You'll see some posts there that are relevant to the shows, maybe just relevant to the news. Leave us some topics. Leave us some interesting tidbits. Give us a show topic. Maybe there's a particular show you want to hear about. With 800 plus shows, the odds are we've already done it, but we might do it again for you. You never know. Just ask.
Yeah, we could do that.
Facebook.com/HM Radio Show.
Before I get to our sponsor, I want to explain, first of all, thanks to our listeners listening through True Talk Internet Radio.
How many times have you done that?
A lot. But the quote I want to give you from Virginia Woolf, this was from Jacob's Room. I think it was like her third book or fourth book. I enjoy the spring more than the autumn now. One does, I think, as one gets older. It looks like it's solid spring now. We finally, the snow flurries have stopped and all that silly stuff.
You mean we can move away from it being January 82nd?
Yeah. My wife, here's the signs of spring. The skunks are out. That's one thing that we noticed. Certainly the spring peepers have been having a great time. There has been a frog orgy.
Can you say that on the air? Is that not one of the seven words? You can't say that word, Tony.
Frog orgy. I promise you.
You can't even give our listeners that visual.
That's not right. Oh, man. I mean, they have been living it up. The noise and the
eggs
and the
everywhere.
Visuals, yeah. It has been absolutely amazing. So it is spring. But I think maybe this spring, maybe a little bit for some of our radio fans, especially in the Kentucky area, getting through a influenza epidemic.
It's been particularly bad this year.
It's been a tough winter weather-wise for those who are annoyed by the weather, but it has been a life-and-death winter for many people because of the extensive influenza epidemic that hit Kentucky and virtually every state in the United States. And so now we see spring. I notice one of the sure signs of spring is the UK, the chief medical officer, has directed the employees to remove their flu shot badges. These little signs, you know, flowers coming up, flu shot badges coming off, and now we suddenly have spring. Our sponsor is the Tick Fixers with their top six quick tick fixing tricks. It is time because, again, a rite of spring. My wife has found the first tick of spring in the Weaver household, and so it is time for us to talk about this.
So was it brought in with the dogs?
Nope. This was probably
brought in by the dog.
We went to we walked down in the mornings to feed the horses. She more than I strayed off the driveway into some grass
that you hadn't mowed.
Yeah,
we've got to get to the root cause, and it's somewhere it's you.
The root cause is roots of grass on the side of the driveway. She got into the higher grass, and a tick approached her and found her attractive. And I respect that.
He made the leap, so to speak, right?
Absolutely did. So we're talking about removing ticks. First of all, in typical Goofus Gallant fashion, we're going to tell you what not to do. Don't use sharp forceps or tweezers. You don't want to destroy the tick's body. Don't crush, puncture, or squeeze the tick's body because, once again, then the tick becomes a hypodermic syringe, injecting whatever is in the tick's intestines into your blood. That's not the situation you want. And this I saw this on Facebook. You think you've got a problem conquered, and it comes back. If you put petroleum jelly, gasoline, nail polish, or other noxious substances to the tick, one, you're going to make it mad. Keep in mind, this particular arachnid has access to your bloodstream. You don't want to make them mad. The other thing, ticks have a respiratory rate of around 3 breaths per hour.
Isn't that amazing?
Well, they've got your blood. They don't really need that much oxygen. So you cannot suffocate a tick. You can't. You can't paint it with petroleum jelly. If you want to leave the thing on for about 8 or 10 hours, probably it will suffocate. I think that's a really dumb idea.
I don't know that it, for your reasons stated, are the reasons that I do it, but I've always been a fan of burning them.
Yeah. Next, do not apply heat with a match or a hot nail while the tick is bit in. If you want to fry that tick after you pull it out, and certainly that tick deserves some form of severe punishment.
For many years in my house, that is how we made use of the ashtrays that we orphaned in 1989.
Put the tick in the ashtray?
And light it on fire.
And this was
what
happened
to my... I'll show you who's boss here. You will not jump on me again.
This is how we treat our enemies. We are Sparta. But please, while the tick is bit in, don't put heat, don't put a match, don't put a hot nail by the tick. Again, irritating the tick can burn you, for one thing, and it also causes the tick to throw up.
But let's be honest, though. If you try to burn the tick while it's on you, I mean, isn't there some kind of stupid fee that we can charge?
And these, I recognize, for most people, they say, well, when was the last time someone burned or mashed a tick and got germs into their bloodstream and died? It has been reported. I know with a mosquito, it has been reported, I believe with a tick. Now, these were people who were on drugs for rheumatoid arthritis and other conditions that suppress their immune system. But this is not impossible. It's not theoretical.
Happened. I get that it can happen, but I mean, one or two times in how many millions and millions, maybe even billions of ticks get picked off?
So coat the thing with gasoline, blow it up while it's still in there, and then cover the area with nail polish.
We don't condone that. No.
I'm just saying.
That is not good advice, Tony.
Right.
You can't give people that over the air.
Okay. But I did read, you know how I do our Facebook page? Well, I've got a Facebook account, and there on Facebook was the old nail polish ploy, and it does not work. Please don't do that stuff. It doesn't work. Also, don't handle the tick with your bare hands. Well, we do. You pull it. You do.
Of course.
But you shouldn't. So you take what do you do? Well, first of all, try to avoid tick bites. Wear long pants.
Yeah, stay in and watch Netflix.
Do the fashion thing. Tuck your pant legs into your socks. Inspect your skin after you come in from outdoors.
That technique works after you're married. I would not recommend doing that, but when you're trying to get married.
If skin exposure is unavoidable, apply insect repellent. And again, DEET is your thing. Products with 10 to 35% DEET, adequate in most circumstances. And 10% will last you around 2 hours. 24% 5 hours protection, again, if you're not swimming or sweating heavily. Products with more than 30% DEET, not used on children. Permethrin is also really handy to put on your clothing, your socks, and so forth, and will last through several washes. That is, again, how to remove ticks and how not to remove ticks. My wife took a pair of tweezers that were not particularly sharp, pulled the tick out by grasping close to the head, and then we put some antiseptic on it, and it was done. And we did not torture the tick. We did not blow it up or do those type of things. But,
I never really thought of it as torture because I don't try to keep them alive.
Well, that's the point. We're not trying to get information out of the tick or anything like
right,
that.
Right. I'm not really.
Where's the location of your top secret nest?
At this point, there's nothing that tick has I want.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. No,
so I don't know where you get these words
like torture.
No, Mr.
Tick, I expect you to die. Sorry, James Bond. I'm a fan. All right. Anyway, that's our sponsor, the Tick Fixers, and their top six. Now, you be quiet. We're going to completely clear up that error. We've got a great production crew. It's the top six quick tick fixing tricks. That's our sponsor for today's show. We've got some things to talk about. The first thing...
With very little time.
I know. Very quickly, Kate Middleton, Duchess of Cambridge, gave birth to a baby boy on April 23rd.
Since when did we start reporting births?
Since that birth, which cost around $8,900 at a private upscale maternity ward in London, is actually cheaper than the average price of a birth in the United States.
Yeah, but it may be that the birth cost $8,900, but in the U.S., that's not your out-of-pocket expense.
No, that's true.
I spent $4 on my daughter. That was our out-of-pocket expense. It was like $4 or $10. It was some crazy number back in the early 90s.
Well, no longer. Average fee.
No, I'm talking about just the delivery.
No, hang on. It says the average fee for the same delivery in the United States was $10,800, according to the International Federation of Health Plans.
But we give you the little footies.
You give pre- and postnatal care, you're up to $30,000. And again, you will be paying a portion of that, certainly. Parents are still left with an average bill of around $3,000. Again, this is Truven Health Analytics. This is the Economist, which is a publication, a British publication.
Did you even keep track of how much your kids cost?
Well, so far, everything I have.
No. Just to deliver them.
I'm sure we kept a bill or whatever the statement was. It's not a bill. We did that. but I put this on the.
Do your kids actually listen to this show?
No.
So you really can say whatever you want. It really doesn't matter.
Absolutely can just, yeah. Strangely enough, I have absolute confidence. No one that really cares about me listens to the show.
So, and that's why we have open.
And that's why we have so much fun here. On
we can say whatever we want.
Let me get this started, Rick. I know you're stalling me, but let me get this started. Because this is interesting. This was back on April 4th, so it's been a while. And the co-author, which is very difficult, Per Arne Svensson at University of Gothenburg in Sweden. It was reported in the AMA Journal of Surgery, reported online March 28th. And just to cut to the chase, because we'll talk more about this in a minute, people who had bariatric surgery, that is the weight loss surgery.
Which one?
They just said any type of bariatric surgery.
So it could be the sleeve, could be the bypass, could be the...
Any of those surgeries. If they were married, they were more likely to get separated or divorced. If they were not married, they were more likely to get married than people who didn't.
Well, I mean, is that news? Which one of those startles you? The getting married or the getting divorced?
I think the idea that I think it really lays to rest the idea that you can make huge changes to your own health and remain in place and nothing else change. Health changes are going to produce changes in your life.
I think they should change their research and look at more factors than just married and divorced, right? They need to look at factors of why did you lose the weight? Did you lose the weight to be more attractive or did you lose the weight to be more healthy?
True.
And once you learn that, that's a pivotal question in answering what the data that you just showed.
And one of my staffers,
You have a staff?
No, I don't have a staff, but it was somebody else's staff. And I told her about this. And she said, well, of course, because people, when they lose weight, they're always grumpy. That was her quote. They're always grumpy. Please don't be grumpy. Take a break and calm yourself down. We're going to talk about this and a lot more stuff in our second fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Better Than Autumn show because after a certain age, according to Virginia Woolf, I enjoy the spring more than the autumn, and I think, as one gets older. And we think, especially after a very severe influenza season, springtime is like a breath of spring, really. And so we are enjoying the spring here in rural Appalachia. Our sponsor for the second time, the Tick Fixers and their top six quick tick fixing tricks. And I've got, again, sections on how to reduce risk and what to do about the ticks. First of all, how do you reduce your risk? Know where the ticks live. You need to know where they live. And they live in the high grass. They live in wooded areas. They live in loose leaves. So, again, if you clean up the area around your house and the area where your children play, then that helps out a lot.
So the question, Tony, is when they're looking for you and you're nowhere to be found, what else are they looking for?
Well, obviously the deer ticks look for deer. Mice are susceptible as well. Ticks like mice.
Really?
Yeah.
And so they're just sitting there really just looking for something warm.
They're looking for something warm that they can bite into and suck its blood. Yep, they're just like guys.
They're mean little things.
You know,
they have the wrong look on life.
If there were a vampire, do you think the vampire, if not finding people, might just catch some rabbits or something like that and do rabbit vampires?
Well, I don't know.
I mean, it's
blood. I don't know, but, you know, Tony, let's be honest. You're showing your age. You're talking about vampires. What you really meant was, you know, zombies.
Anyway, you need to know where those ticks live. Use a safe and effective tick repellent.
How did we go from tick to vampire? I mean, that...
Well, because ticks sit in the woods, and they wait for anything. And I've wondered what happens to monsters, ghosts, and those type of creatures when there's no people around. Do they just sit there and mope around and wait for the people?
They're hiding.
Or, in fact,
they're waiting.
Do they have a busy life, which when you come in and interfere with, that's not why they want to kill you and chase you away, because you have annoyed them and taken them away from what they actually do. I do not know what a ghost does when there's no one to haunt.
Boy, now I'm going to lose sleep tonight. Thanks, Tony.
Just throwing that out there. Thanks. Ticks, when there's no one to bite, they will find anything that has blood and warm, they will bite it. Safe and effective tick repellent. If you spend time in an area where ticks live, use that as directed. Use DEET repellents up to 30% on skin or clothing. Don't use DEET on infants under 2 years of age. Treat your clothing and gear with permethrin-based repellents. This is a really nice thing. Permethrin is it's available from the store. It's as a spray. You can spray it onto your clothing. It will last through several laundry cycles. So you don't put it on your skin, but you can put it on your clothes. Wear light-colored clothing, not because ticks don't like it, but simply because you can spot them more easily. And talk with your veterinarian about safe and effective products for your pets. Check for ticks once a day after spending time in those areas, especially in the hard-to-see areas, your groin, your armpits, etc. Remove the ticks as soon as you find one. We talked about how to remove it in our last fractional portion. You might go back and rerun that if you did not hear it. Clean the area with soap and water. Examine your gear and pets for ticks, too. Now, as far as the where they live, keep your lawns and trails mowed short. Remove leaves and brush. Create a landscape barrier of wood chips or rocks between mowed lawns and woods. Again, if it dries out, ticks do not like dry weather. They flourish when area is damp. They like that sort of weather. And the dry, hot areas, these rocky, sandy areas, ticks can't handle that. And they can't handle wood chips, apparently. I didn't know that. But there it is. That's our sponsor, the Tick Fixers, and their top six quick tick fixing tricks. Now, we were last time, Rick and I just got started arguing about this. So
pontificating.
Yes, game on here. This was Reuters Health, April 4th. They're reporting on the AMA Journal of Surgery online, March 28th. The people out of Sweden, and Sweden, by golly, they do great registries. They had two studies. The first one looked at almost 2,000 obese bariatric surgery patients compared with 2,000 who did not have the surgery, and 999 of those two groups, 999 of those 4,000 people, were single at the start. 4 years later, 21% of those who had surgery had gotten married or started a new relationship. Only 11% of those who didn't have the surgery. 10 years later, 35% marriage in the surgery group, 19% in the no surgery group. When you look at the people who were married at the start of the study, the rates of divorce, 9% in the surgery group, 6% in the control group. After 10 years, 17% in the surgery group, 12% in the control group. So it is clear that the weight loss surgery decision is associated with, and again, not necessarily causes it, but it is associated with other life changes and certainly changes in marital status. And Rick made the point that you don't do this thing in a vacuum. I think you change your partners. You change your priorities.
Right.
And when you change your priorities, you find a different circle of friends. And it may be that that is important to the success of the weight loss surgery. In fact, if you have yourself surgical altered and you do not change your friends, you will not change your habits. And if you don't change your habits, the surgery, in fact, will be less effective. I'll posit that. I don't know if that's true or not.
I mean, they obviously need to dig a little deeper. I think, you know, this is probably just the first round in a series of studies related to this kind of correlation, or the top, you know, what's happening between bariatric surgery and marriage. I do think it's interesting that, you know, right now there's a divorce rate of somewhere around 51%, and I'm trying to figure out how these numbers tie into that, because, you know, there's a portion of those people with bariatric surgery that are going to get divorced anyway. Because of that 51%. The question is The control group, you said obviously one was 6%. I think the regular group was 9%.
Yes.
So obviously there's a 3%. That's a statistical difference between the control and the research.
And you say, but that's good. Now, these are Swedish people who have apparently the means to have the surgery if that's needed in Sweden. I don't know that.
Sure.
But we could be looking at a different group than the general population, certainly than U.S. Numbers.
But wouldn't you say, Tony, I mean, you know, and again, we were kind of joking about this in the break. You know, I've lost, you know, 350 pounds in my life, right? 50 pounds about six or seven times. I mean, you know, I'm the epitome of a yo-yo. So, I mean, I'm certainly in not, I mean, I'm well versed in what it takes to try to, you know, gain and lose weight. And
right.
But I do believe that people that undergo these dramatic weight loss, you know, mine's never been more than about, I think the most I've ever lost at one time was like 60 or 70 pounds. But you see people lose 100, 150, 200 pounds. They're morbidly obese. They get the surgery and they come down. I mean, that has to change, not who you are, but it has to have some major change on your mental status and your overall emotional status. I mean, just you as a person have to change a little when that happens, right?
I believe so.
And so maybe the you change into just makes you less compatible with what you started off with that was compatible with you.
Now, I mentioned a staffer just said, well, maybe you're just grumpy. As people lose weight, they get grumpy. Or maybe thin people get grumpy. You know, there's that whole jolly thing. You would not say, wow, that's a jolly thin person. So maybe they're more grumpy and harder to get along with.
Well, that's possible, too. I mean, I certainly know when I'm on a diet, I'm not a happy guy to be around, especially at lunchtime.
Right. It takes more and more energy you have to devote to maintaining the diet as the weight goes down. I mean, it gets harder and harder.
Isn't it funny, though, that life itself is like, I don't know. I'm having a hard time making an analogy, but I want to say, you know, you have so many. Let's say you can juggle, and let's say, Tony, that you have the ability to juggle five things. That's mm-hmm. that's your capability. For me, the sixth thing is always food, and so for a while, I can get the sixth thing in, but I got to drop one of the five. And then at some point, those five become so much more important that eventually the food gets pushed back out to six, and now all of a sudden I'm gaining weight again. And so while that whole transition is occurring, I don't know. It just seems to me like that's always been a struggle I've had.
Apparently, again, even with weight loss surgery, it's not like you stay in place. You keep the same. You do the exact same things. The very act of losing weight will cause you to do different things.
Well, and you become
have the ability to do.
You almost have to become a much more active person. So if your spouse really enjoyed sitting on the couch and watching TV with you, then you're probably not going to do that after a large weight loss, right?
And right.
So now all of a sudden the dynamics of your relationship's going to change. You know, you're probably one of you is grumpy, the other one isn't.
I mean, we're not naming names, but somebody's grumpy. Certainly. So it is interesting, and just a warning, if someone you love is having weight loss surgery, recognize the changes are not simply related to their tummy.
No, not.
There will be lifestyle changes as well if it is successful.
Not to throw water on all this, but, you know, and just blow up the conversation, but how much of you take the change in attitude, the loss of weight, and I'm talking about maybe a married person, and then you throw in, you know, the modern drugs for ED. You know, how much does that change somebody? How much changes are occurring in a person that you just can't live with them anymore, or they don't want to live with one person anymore?
On that question, we'll move on to the
why. It's a great topic. We can talk the whole segment about.
Listen, if you want to talk about ED and marital relations, you have at it.
I'm just saying that's all part of a psyche.
I have no desire to go there. All right, then moving on to our next.
I don't think we finished that topic. But that's okay. You move
Listen,
on.
Listen, if you would
it
like
is your
to
show.
Carry on about marital function and erectile marital
no
relations
this is about
and
bariatric surgery. This is about losing weight.
Right, for all of you who want to know how that affects ED drugs, and I don't know what you're talking about. Just
you weren't even
hit
listening
up Rick
to me,
on
you?
Facebook.
You
and
weren't
let
even
him,
listening to me.
Carry on this conversation. I am talking about electric cars.
I'm
going
to go back to my computer.
Should thrill
now.
You, Mr. Technology. What this group did? This was out of Munich, Germany. Cardiac implantable electronic devices. They are standard care now for a lot of things. You have both the pacemakers, which speed up the heart, but also there are the defibrillators, which they can shock the heart if it goes too fast. So they have to sense the heart. They have, they're programmable. They have a lot of electronics. They do have they are accessible. They are, what do you call those things, the devices that are on the World Wide Web? They are the web of things, right? The Internet of Things.
Internet of Things.
The IoTs of your heart.
The devices.
Yes, those are devices. And the question was, well, what happens when you get into an electric car with one of those devices? Would the electric car create such a magnetic field, electromagnetic field, that it would reset your pacemaker? Seems unlikely to me. I did not worry about that before I read this paper. It was in the Annals of Internal Medicine. It was as a letter to the editor, but there it was. They approached 150 consecutive patients with some type of implantable cardiac pacemaker device seen in their clinic for routine follow-up, 2014-2015, and 40 patients declined to participate. Out of 100 people, they said, hey, would you like to go sit in an electric car and see if it messes with your defibrillator pacemaker?
Are you going to give me a Tesla?
Well, no.
Because if that's part of the research, sign me up.
No, you get to sit in the Tesla and see if your heart stops.
Well, my heart would stop when I push the gas pedal and we got to go fast. Insane mode.
At any rate, 40 of them were through. And I was thinking, that must have been really tough. Well, we don't know whether it's going to stop your pacemaker from working or not. Why don't we find out? Would you please? And we'll sit next to you. I mean, the cardiologist sits next to you.
We're
going to
give you an AED. Right,
yeah,
an
sure.
External
so there
defibrillator
was
to have right next to you.
Right. So they were assigned to one of four electric cars, which had the largest European market share. And they sat in the front seat while the cars ran on those roller things so that they stood still. They sat in the back seat while it was charging. And then finally, they drove it on a public road. And they measured the electric fields and so electromagnetic field, and there was absolutely no signs of any interference. In fact, the fields were really minuscule. They were well shielded. There was really nothing going on. So their conclusions: the electric and magnetic fields generated during the operation and charging of electric cars did not affect any of these cardiac devices' function. So there you go. If you were wondering, it's safe. I think, though, to me, it's always about the conducting of the research. How do you approach someone and ask them if they would mind sitting in an electric car to see if it made their heart stop?
How would you ask anybody to do something that makes their heart stop?
Yeah. Well, these guys are electrophysiologists. The thing you as a member of the public need to know, our radio fans need to know, is if you are an electrophysiologist, you start and stop people's hearts for a living. That's what you do. You would rather have a trained professional do that than to have that happen in your backyard. And so that simply people will come in and let them start and stop their hearts to try to figure out how to protect them from having that happen in their backyard. And so these guys, for them, it's nothing. You just walk up and say, hey, I know I stopped your heart 3 times in the lab last week. How about we take a car ride?
Love to take another shot at that. This time it's going to be more fun.
Yeah, listen, you get to drive around town. Anything at all happens, I'm right there. I mean, it was as safe as testing to see if your heart would stop could be, but you have to get their consent, and that was a tough. I think that was just a tough call getting consent for them.
You think?
Yeah, I do.
So
there was nothing earth shaking about the results.
Would you participate in any research that the outcome was to see if we could stop your heart?
If I were thinking of buying a Tesla, I would want to try it out with an electrophysiologist. So if I thought I might get an electric car, yeah, I probably would check it out before I got it.
Tony, is this you not understanding magnetic fields and electric and all that? Or is it, I mean, that stuff, I can't even buy this as a viable set of research.
You think it was stupid?
Stupid's a strong word. It's an ugly word. I think it was ill-conceived. There's other ways. I mean, different hybrid cars different electric cars are built different. Some of them have the motor at the wheels. Some of them have a big central engine. Some of them have the battery underneath the passenger. Some of them are in the back. I mean, are we suggesting that the battery is going to put off electromagnetic waves?
Well, top four cars in answer to your variety.
And how is an electric motor any different than the motor that's turning in your house air conditioning?
I'm glad you mentioned that because I found out something. They said if you drove a gasoline-powered car with steel-belted radial tires, you could generate magnetic fields that were at least in the ballpark of what they saw. I did not know that,
but that's what they said.
Is that not cool?
Well, you say cool. I say you just took over the conversation.
Okay.
All I'm saying is, for electric motors that have been generated, essentially electromagnetic forces have been in these motors for years. We're not building new motors. Now, they may be building them more efficient. They may have a different, you know, the windings may be slightly different, whatever. But the fact is this electric car is not unlike any other electric motor that we've ever used for other things, right?
I guess so. But they ask, you know, they not only did they monitor the person to make sure they didn't fall over dead, they were monitoring their electrocardiogram to make sure that it didn't miss a beat, you know, the pacer didn't miss a beat or things like that.
I mean, have we done this much research with a microwave oven?
I don't know.
We know they stop pacemakers.
Yeah.
We know they do.
They used to. Before they got shielded, they did.
I mean, you know what's funny to me about a microwave, Tony? Have you ever really looked at the glass on it? Have you ever got up real close and looked in?
No.
I wanted to see what was inside it.
That's dangerous.
Well, don't you realize the glass, it's actually a piece of metal with a bunch of holes in it?
Yeah, there's that.
Well, that's obviously to cut down so the microwaves don't come out. But guess what? Where the holes are, you're looking through. The microwaves are coming out.
Yeah.
So you're putting your nose up next to the glass, and you're looking in, and you're getting the stuff right in your face.
My parents would not let me sit too close to the TV set.
Yeah, they worried.
And keep in mind, I am a guy who's had visual problems all my life. I am extremely nearsighted, and my parents would not let me sit close enough to get a clear view of the TV set because they were worried that it would somehow irradiate my body and cause cancer.
Yeah, and
they love me, I know, but I spent my youth with a blurry TV, and I couldn't tell the
details. But at least the old CRT base, you know, they had an electron gun in them that shot electrons and hit a phosphor coating.
Yeah.
So there was actually some energy that was transmitting about 2 feet, or if you've been on the size of the tube, you know. And so, yeah, you get up close to that phosphor, all bets are off. So, I mean, there was some legitimacy to that.
Well, I have to go back and apologize to my mom. Because I just thought she was being cruel.
I wonder how many people still remember how an old CRT TV works.
Oh, no, we've had this conversation. If an alien life form came here and said, gee, how do your machines work? I have absolutely no idea. You turn the switch on. That's all I know. I could not explain how anything works that I use on a daily basis.
Well, you certainly wouldn't consult this show for that.
No. You know, you're probably right. Why don't we take a break, and we'll try to figure out how that works. We'll come back with our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Better Than Autumn show because, let's face it, spring is, for some of us, better than autumn. Our sponsor for the final time, the Tick Fixers and their top six quick tick fixing tricks. And I will just remind you, protect yourself from tick bites. Know where they live. They live in high grass, in leafy areas where there is landscape, where there are leaves and brush. They recommend keeping your lawns and trails mowed short, making sure you've got wide margins on trails where you don't have. This is one tip from us at Health Matters, which is just a common sense. If you have a walking trail through the woods, trim the branches back so that the ticks cannot jump from the branches onto your body. Remove leaves and brush. Create a landscape barrier with wood chips or rocks between the mowed lawns and the woods. And this makes it harder for the ticks to cross that if you're in an area that is high in ticks. And in the Northeast, of course, with Lyme disease, this is really life and death. Kentucky's Lyme rates are lower. There are, however, other diseases, including Rocky Mountain spotted fever and Powassan virus and southern tick associated rash illness. There is an interesting one in which it appears that in some way the tick, your immune system sees the tick and it thinks that it is meat in some way. You become allergic to meat. You have allergic reactions if you eat meat after being bitten by a tick. And who wants that? So my goodness, get those ticks off within 24 hours if you can at all. This was from Reuters Health back last summer. There was a study looking at pet owners. 2,700 households in three states where Lyme disease is common. More than half the households had a dog, a cat, or both. 88% of these households reported using some form of tick control on their pets. But 31% of pet owners found a tick crawling on a human in the house. 19% of pet owners have found a tick attached to a human. Only 20% of non-pet owners saw the tick, and only 14% had it attached to a human. So it is pretty clear that if you own pets, that is one avenue that you might get a tick bite. Check for ticks at least once a day after spending time where the ticks live. Remember that DEET-based products, up to 30% DEET, are excellent at repelling ticks, as is permethrin when applied to clothing and gear. It does a nice job and lasts a little bit longer than the DEET in that application. And then finally, just reminding you about removing ticks. Avoid tick bites if at all possible. Wear long pants, tuck them into your socks. Inspect your skin daily. And if you have to remove a tick, use blunt forceps. If you're going to torture the tick, and I know you are, Rick, then please wait until it's been removed from your body. If you're going to kill the tick, do so after it's removed from your body. Don't try to.
I prevent the tick from ever harming another human. I'm a vigilante, so to speak.
So that's our sponsor, the Tick Fixers, and their top six quick tick fixing tricks. And this is from April 23rd. This was, everybody has heard this, and just wanted to put in our 2 cents worth here at Health Matters. You may be aware that a judge in California has ruled that their Proposition 65, which was enacted in 1986, mandates businesses with more than 10 employees warn consumers if their products contain a chemical that the state has ruled as carcinogenic. One of the chemicals the state has ruled is carcinogenic is acrylamide, and acrylamide is that chemical is released when you brew coffee. It is also released when you make toast. It is also released when you fry, bake, broil, or roast pretty much anything.
What about when you burn a tick?
You may release acrylamide burning a tick. That's possible. Bread contains it. Fried and mashed potatoes do. Roasted coffee bean does. And it's found in overall 40% of the calories consumed by people in the United States. The foods that they consume contain acrylamide. Basically, superhuman, super-earth levels, acrylamide can cause cancer in rats. No evidence that it causes cancer in people. And so we have a public policy. I mean, I understand. Wouldn't you want to know if there's a cancer-causing chemical in a business that you go into?
Right.
Yeah, you would. Sort of. I think, though, what would be better is what is your risk of getting cancer from that chemical? Now, wait a second. You know, the business may downplay your risk, and you need to just know, and you can find out your own risk. I guess that's so, but this is absurd. If we put up warning signs that coffee causes cancer, you have heard that peanut butter causes cancer, milk causes cancer, other things have chemicals that can cause cancer.
But it's not the coffee. It's the brewing of coffee.
Right. You could have, basically take a bath in cold coffee beans and you'd be fine. But if some place makes coffee or toast or french fries or virtually any food that's not boiled or microwaved, then you're going to have cancer-causing chemicals. So all the restaurants essentially should have a warning that the process of preparing hot food, in fact, leads to cancer. Can cause cancer.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, coffee's been around for so long. It's been one of our kind of favorites, even though it's, you know.
Not a single case. In fact, coffee overall appears to lower your risk of getting cancer. Now, I remember when we didn't think that was so. back when I was in medical school, they thought coffee caused cancer. And what they found was people who drank coffee also smoked, and so we were measuring the effects of the cigarette. That's how you get yourself into trouble with some of these associations, is you don't think things through. In this case, though, it's pretty clear the coffee by itself, which is we've been drinking for hundreds of years, does not appear to be associated with a higher risk. And we on Health Matters have been reporting studies, and we don't get paid anything for this. We look at these studies, and it looks like coffee overall is a healthy thing to do. This is this was from the New York Times, an editorial, which I thought was really pretty good. They mentioned warning labels should be applied when the danger is clear, the danger is large, and the danger is avoidable. It is not clear that with respect to acrylamide, any of these criteria are met. It is certainly not the case regarding coffee. This Proposition 65 could do more harm than good. This is what I wanted to – the reason I wanted to bring this, I think everyone recognizes that coffee is not a deadly cancer-causing substance. It just simply isn't. But this came from the Journal of Public Policy and Marketing in 1994. This was a systematic review. And their conclusions, they said, the emphasis of policymaking in the past has tended to focus more on the identification of hazards than on helping consumers develop an understanding of the magnitude and probability of the hazard. If Americans slap a label on every substance that has the potential to cause cancer, the editorial ends with this, eventually those labels will stop having any meaning. If nearly inconsequential dangers get the same warning as significant dangers, then people start ignoring preventative efforts entirely. And I could not agree more with this. I think in this case, this is really counterproductive, that theoretically there is a chemical in roasted coffee and in many foods that are prepared hot that can cause cancer, and yet we are not going to do anything about that. But this judge, I suppose the law, you apply the law, and the judge just says, look, either change the law or don't change the law, but as long as there is a law, I'm going to apply it. You would hope that there would be some common sense. I'm not asking for judges, activist judges that change the laws themselves. But in this case, this does not help the consumers at all. So either the voters of California are silly, the judge is silly, or maybe the whole combination is silly, but we have here a situation where we're not helping people make good decisions.
Boy, Tony, I want the record to reflect that I am resisting the urge to just go on a California tirade. But I do think there's something to be said for it. You could argue they're out in front, right? They're that pace car, right? Or in technology, we've coined a term, the bleeding edge. I believe they get us out there on the edge, and it actually they're doing harm because of the speed at which they're trying to go faster than everybody can go. And they got to figure out a better way to do that because not everybody can keep up with the pace car.
Well, we have to look at risks and benefits, and we have to be able to understand them. It is our position here at Health Matters that there are drugs that are less risky and more risky and drugs that are less beneficial and more beneficial. We're going to sign off today's show with Keytruda, which is an immune treatment for lung cancer that has the potential to really make some changes in our response to lung cancer. But it is a vicious, you do not treat lung cancer with sugar cookies. I mean, this is something with some severe side effects.
Right.
So you get a chance to hear those when we sign off.
Yeah, and you know, and the thing is you know, lung cancer, you know, we've been going down that marijuana path, you know, where nobody's talking about the fact that lung cancer rates will increase as marijuana becomes more.
Right. Let me give you Health Matters, two rules of health. Health Matters rule of pulmonology, the number one rule of pulmonology. If you put something in your mouth and you set fire to it, that's bad for your lungs.
Well, anything, you don't even have to put it in your mouth.
If you
hang out near fires, in, you know, if you're constantly burning leaves in your yard.
Or ticks.
Well, they only put off one little puff of smoke and they're done.
Rick and his tick bonfires.
Right.
You probably
they only have a little puff of smoke and they're gone.
Okay. But in all seriousness, you're right. I mean, burning leaves, we used to burn a lot of leaves here in Moorhead, and my emphysema patients dreaded March when the leaf burning started. It made them sick. It put them in the hospital.
I just believe that the marijuana, as people go and go through their legalization process and they start spinning it back up again, you know, the federal government really needs to get out in front of this from a research standpoint and go back to warning labels and make sure that everybody understands that this is going to cause cancer.
Right. So again, we're looking at risk and benefit. And I know we have the second, by the way, in case you're wondering, the Health Matters second rule is anything that temporarily incapacitates your brain permanently incapacitates your brain. That is, whether it is a concussion, whether it is a sleeping pill, whether it is alcohol or any other substance that temporarily stuns your brain, there are long-term effects of that. We do not believe that you can simply stun your brain and then walk away from that and not have any problems. And so those are two things that lead us to be concerned about marijuana. Now, I want everybody to understand, I personally recognize marijuana is a drug. I do not think it is the most wonderful drug ever, but I think it is a drug that may have some utility. I am troubled by the fact that it is smoked. I am very troubled because things that are smoked hit the brain very fast. If you want to make a person addicted, you give them things that hit their brain very fast.
Right.
That whether it's sugar, whether it's taking a perfectly good OxyContin pill and injecting it, breaking it up and injecting it, the reason you do that is your brain loves to get this stuff really fast. Same way that you inhale alcohol as opposed to drinking it, it gets this stuff to your brain faster, and that's the way you create addiction. And so I really worry about the things that are inhaled, whether it's a vaping or whether it's actually just rolling your own. On the other hand, marijuana has some possibilities. On April 20th, U.S. FDA, their committee voted unanimously to approve a purified formulation of cannabidiol, I believe, or cannabidiol. I'm not sure which. That is one of the ingredients of marijuana, which is used for a certain type of seizures, Lennox-Gastaut syndrome and Dravet syndrome in patients 2 years of age or older. That is, these drugs can have some real potential to help with seizures.
Right.
I do not believe – one of the things they said is now we finally have some concentrations of these things we can measure and we can adjust to make sure that the patients respond. Now, I've talked to a lot of people who feel that this is the pharmaceutical industry intruding into marijuana. They're upset because marijuana is so good, and they want to make it into pills. As a doctor, I will tell you, our approach is always to standardize the dose, and then we can actually study it. If we don't standardize the dose, we can't. But I know that is frustrating for those who firmly believe in marijuana and feel that that basically our pharmaceutical industry has no business tampering with our supply of marijuana.
Well, it's funny too, because I really don't want to be in the marijuana debate. I'm not one of these guys that has a. I don't have a strong, I don't particularly, I don't use marijuana. I don't like it. I have no, but then again, I don't care if other people do. I just wish we would eliminate if they're going to do that, I wish they would eliminate the smoking part of it.
Yeah.
Right. Get it. Cause I mean, we've been down the smoking path before, and that's, I don't know.
I understand where you're coming from. Now, again, going back to the coffee thing, if we can identify the real risk of marijuana, the types of marijuana that are more risky, and then the benefits of marijuana, then we can have an informed debate about it.
Absolutely.
As long as the Drug Enforcement Agency keeps it as a Schedule I drug, we can't even research it.
Right.
And so now we are getting further and further behind as state after state legalizes something called medical marijuana, which doesn't bear any resemblance to anything else I do in my practice. And that is the frustration that I have. I need to know what it does and doesn't do. I don't think it cures everything, and I think there are significant problems, but I think that it might be very helpful in certain circumstances. I simply can't tell, and that's the frustrating part of marijuana. I will leave that, and I will, in the last little bit we've got, I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about opioids. We used to call them narcotics, but narcotics is probably not the right word. Opioid, although it's harder to say, is what we talk about with these drugs. Again, they're painkiller drugs that have been rampant in the United States. Interestingly enough, in the a data service looked at, this was reported April 19th, the volume of prescriptions dispensed by U.S. doctors, opioid prescriptions, dropped 12% last year, the largest annual decline in 25 years. So if you are a person who has chronic pain and you see benefits to opioids, this is bad news. We have finally choked off the supply of opioid prescriptions, and we have done that by making it very hard for people who need these drugs to get them. If you are a person who sees this as the start of addiction, this is great news. We are finally choking off the supply that leads to addiction. And both those statements are true. And once again, it's a matter of risk and benefit. And right now, we consider opioids to be all risk. On the other hand, and this is the frustrating part, even though the supply of prescription opioids has dropped, we have the 2016 update now of Kentucky's overdoses. And in 2016, our overdose rate went from 1,248 in 2015 up to 1,404 in 2016, as reported in June of 2017. So we are still in serious trouble on opioids. We need help. Perhaps that help is marijuana. I don't know. But I know if you set fire to it and put it in your mouth, that's not a good thing. What is a good thing is us getting off the air.
Special thanks to our Morehead State Public Radio producer, Brian Courtney, and to Eric Bilber, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember these properties that Health Matters shares with the lung cancer immunotherapy Keytruda.
Health Matters is a prescription radio show used to treat melanoma, skin cancer, and certain types of lung cancer. Our show may be used alone as your first treatment or combined with chemotherapy.
Health Matters can cause your immune system to attack normal organs and tissues in any area of your body and can affect the way they work. These problems can become serious or life-threatening and can lead to death.
Call or see your doctor right away if you develop any symptoms of the following problems or the symptoms get worse.
Symptoms of pneumonitis may include shortness of breath, chest pain, or coughing.
Inflammation of the colon can lead to holes in your intestine. Symptoms may include diarrhea, stools that have blood or mucus, or severe stomach area pain.
Inflammation of the liver or hepatitis can lead to yellowing of the skin, nausea, vomiting, pain on the right side of your stomach area, dark urine, or bleeding and bruising more easily than usual.
People who have had an organ transplant may be more likely to reject the transplant if they listen to our show.
That's just sad, isn't it?
Yes.
Whatever you do, do not take this stuff lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for more exciting news from the world of medical research on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.